coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
Welcome in on a Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and the voice of your Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan in. Bo still gallivanting around in Big Horn, having the time of his life. But we've got the good weather here, Jim. A good weekend, hopefully, and great to be with you. How you doing?
I am doing good. Good to be with you. It's nice to be here. Boy, this is a great day. Great day today, weather-wise. Feels great.
Finally, right? We've earned it.
I would hope for this in training camp, Nathan.
No hotter than this in training camp.
No warmer than this.
Just beautiful and sunny. The Browns continuing phase two of their offseason today, which means they're able to get out on the grass, no helmets, no offense versus defense, but start to really install this offense, throw the ball around a little bit, as we saw a little teaser up at the end of the Building the Browns episode. And I know you like this week's Building the Browns.
I was glued to Building the Browns, and I just want to commend the producers of that. This is not a shameless plug. I mean, I am an audience person, okay? I was glued to it because I knew it was the draft episode, but it was so much more than that. For instance, the story about Nick Harris and what he went through to transform his body to become, you know, a bigger, stronger center, and with the starting job being dangled out there in front of him with J.C. Treader being gone, and how he's eating like 7,000 calories a day.
7,000 calories, Jim.
A day. He's reaching for these smoothies that are like 1,000 a pop.
Liquid gold.
But how he worked every day. You know, like, he stayed here every day. And I'm excited about him. You know, we've only had a couple of glimpses of him when he's played, but he really caught my eye, which is difficult. I mean, it's a difficult position to typically catch your eye unless you're really looking at the guy. But I really enjoyed watching him play. 2 years ago, he played guard.
Yep.
Then last year, he came in and he played center. And I thought he did a great job that day in Green Bay. He was all over the field. He's a different kind of center, I think, than JC, who was very effective at what he did. But that was a great story. And then the draft stories are great. But the other thing that was really neat that hit me was a couple of the young rookies, upon being drafted, said, you know, I already had Deshaun Watson reach out to me and say, hey, welcome, looking forward to throwing to you, looking forward to having you with us, which was the case with the first pick that they had with the defensive back. So I thought that was great, and it tells me how they are really starting to mesh, you know?
Yeah, and Kevin Stefanski made the point on the show that, you know, the most important thing is for us to become a team and to be around each other and to get that. But, you know, you mentioned Deshaun Watson reaching out to those guys, and yet, like, he is, from talking to people around here, he has come in, become the unquestioned leader, wanting to get guys together here, wanting to get together with guys off the field. We've seen him spend time with Bernie Kosar already.
I saw him having dinner.
They had dinner, and they were just at the Rams, a semi-pro football team game over the weekend. He has definitely taken that leadership role, and it's nice to see, you know, that's a big thing for a rookie to get that text. You know, that's got to mean a lot.
Yeah. But not only that, but then a couple of other guys said, I can't wait to play with this guy, Deshaun Watson. And, you know, that is the excitement that I think we're all anticipating when we finally see Deshaun and see the Browns with Deshaun Watson in that position, which is so important. But I would urge people, watch that episode.
Yeah.
It's a great episode. And you can watch it at any time, of course, with today being what it is. And I thought they did a great job. I thought the mock draft that they had
That's pretty cool.
Hey, Washington called, they want to move. You know, I thought that was really neat because, you know, you're only allowed behind the doors so many times, or you're only allowed so far for something like the draft. And, yeah, I mean, you have these reporters with these networks that are kind of embedded, but they're still, you know, they're not really – embedded. And so that's what that show does. But this is a great episode. I commend them. I was glued to it.
Yeah, you can get it at youtube.com/Browns. You can check that one out. And back real quickly to your point on Nick Harris, you know, we got to see him. The guy was tremendous at Washington, was in the Pac-12, the best center in the conference 2 years in a row, allowed, I think, 2 pass rushing pressures in 2 years. And then that game against Green Bay, 41 pass blocking snaps, no pressures allowed, and we averaged 9 yards carrying. To your point, there were times where he was pulling from center and leading the pack. One of the big runs Dearness Johnson had down the right sideline there. So they're very excited about him. And I used to tell Gibby all the time, because, you know, for a while there, our gym and their gym were in some ways the same, or I would walk through there to get to our gym. there wasn't a time that I was going to the gym that I did not see Nick Harris working out.
You know, I remember his rookie year, if you remember, in training camp that year. J.C. Treader, just at the start of camp, it had a little bit of a knee
procedure
done. And so he was going to sit it out because he was a veteran. They knew what they had there. He was going to sit it out until the beginning of the season, which happened. So we saw Nick Harris day in and
day
out.
Yep.
So he really got a lot of reps. Then the other thing you have to remember, J.C. would not practice as much during the regular season because he was a veteran, and, of course, he was nursing various situations. And so Nick Harris would obviously get a lot of work then. But that Green Bay game, I can remember saying, who the heck is that out in front of that play? And it was Nick Harris a couple of times. So I remember the play you're alluding to, and he was sensational. I remember Doug saying when he burst onto the scene. Remember, he played against the Giants.
Yeah, after Hubbard tore his ACL, he had to come in and play guard that game.
Yeah, right. And all of a sudden, Doug said, I'll say one thing about him. He gets on his guy fast, which will help him a great deal. Doug thought he needed to get bigger. They obviously agreed. He agreed, and I think they've taken that steps to make him bigger. So I think we're on our way there. But he has taken the opportunity very seriously.
Oh, very seriously.
And
they said 17 pounds of muscle he's added to his frame already. And you're right. He's got great feet. And Deke, of course, loves it when the guys have good feet. But he's low, so he can get on his guys quickly.
That's what he said. He said he gets on his guys very, very quickly.
Which is, you got to do that.
Right.
Win the leverage game there. All right. How was your weekend, Jim? A lot of sports going on. A lot of excitement in the sports world. The Kentucky Derby, which I found
good
to be the most fascinating.
80-1
wasn't in the race until
Friday afternoon.
Yeah,
Friday afternoon. There was a deadline. How about this? He was they bought him off a claims race, okay, for $30,000. I mean, you know, a friend of ours just bought a horse for like $32,000, and it's eating grass out in the yard, right? They bought this horse for $30,000, and on Saturday he won the Kentucky Derby. That's just amazing. That sport is incredible. Sometimes, I mean, They are so into bloodlines and, you know, doing that and making it perfect. And then you have a horse like this come out of literally out of nowhere, out of a pack of like 20 horses. That was amazing.
I mean, it was 10 lengths back on the final stretch and
you know
outran
what's great?
The favorite.
Did you watch when they would show you his path?
Yeah.
His path to victory.
The outside in and then.
Yeah, and how they would, you know, keep pointing the arrow where he was.
Yeah. He wasn't in the race.
I know.
I was stunned watching it. I mean, the announcers were stunned.
So was the guy that called it, who's the great Larry Kelmis, who calls all the Triple Crown races. And, I mean, he's doing a phenomenal job, as he always does.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I mean, he admits, oh, my God, this is one of the biggest upsets in Kentucky Derby history.
Second longest odds
in
the history of the Derby, 148 years, which is amazing to me that there was somebody who would be more of a long shot than a horse that was just added to the race on Friday.
Unbelievable.
And it won, and I remember when we were watching it, And the announcers even said there was nothing in this horse's past that would indicate it was capable of doing what it did. And yet it went out and did it. And it beat two of the biggest favorites, including the favorite. And I was just watching it stunned. And, you know, you're focusing on, the name eludes me right now, but the number three horse, which was the favorite, was started with an E. And then and Zandon was the 10 horse was right on
the
his
one
right.
I was kind of into was Messier.
Uh-huh.
You know, Messier was at the top two, you know, the great hockey player Mark Messier.
Yeah.
And you know, I was kind of into them because they were kind of there and that was where the race was. And then all of a sudden this horse just came up on that rail and found that lane. Great job by the jockey.
The jockey, you saw Mooney moved him over to get the last shot.
Yeah.
But it almost felt like the favorite was so worried about Zandon that it didn't occur to him that a horse was coming from the rail because he kind of was veering him off to kind of hold him off. And then it was electric. That really was. And I've watched, you know, you watch the Derby every year. That was one of the, I think that's one of it's an all-time Derby.
I think, I definitely think it was because it's such a long shot. And that's why they put those horses in the race. I mean, they love a long shot like that. And that, you know, sometimes, and then there are other roles for horses in the race. There's like, are we going to put a speed horse in there
Pates,
to
set
try
the
and
pace.
Get it to the pace?
Yeah.
It won't hold on. And then the eventual talent will win out. The breeding will win out, they say. But that wasn't the case. Now, that jockey, from what I understand, races a great deal in the Youngstown area.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think he is, you know, I mean, he is now.
Well, now I was going to say he's writing his own
ticket. I don't think he is, you know, out of the class of Mike Smith and all those guys that are in it every year that go out and win it. And I think, I know that they said that he basically races out of the Youngstown area. The name of the track down there, does Gibby know the
name? I thought it was somewhere in Mahoning Valley.
Mahoning Valley, that's it. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Epicenter, by the way. The
Epicenter, yes, thank you, was the favorite.
But supposedly that jockey was racing there in Mahoning Valley on Friday night,
yeah.
And that horse was in New York getting ready to run in another race.
Right, a different race.
Yeah. Hey, turn around. Come back.
So the best was, I don't know if you guys,
an opening.
I don't know if you guys caught this, but this was my favorite part of the aftermath of it. I mean, everybody was stunned. You could see that everybody at Churchill Downs, absolutely stunned, floored. And then you've got the interview where they go and they interview the people who were the owners of this horse.
Oh, right, right.
And at first, the first time they interviewed him, which was kind of right after, they're like, did you think that this was even possible? And the guy's like, never in our wildest dreams did we think this was going to happen. And they talked about how they were into horse racing, yada, yada. But then by the time the guy had composed himself and he did another interview, I want to say about 30 minutes later, the same guy who was wearing the red hat, and he's like, yeah, we don't enter our horses in races we don't think we can win. And I was like, wait a second, buddy. 30 minutes ago, you're like, no chance.
Hey, lest you think that in that sport, those guys that lead the horses out, they pony the horses out who are actually the horses in the race. Lest you think that's just a nice little ride in the park.
Apparently
on
not.
Saturday afternoon. I would think that that one poor guy with Rich Strike grabbing his leg and then his hand, I mean, he was really riled up. I mean, he had a lot of gas left in the tank, and he was not happy at that point.
Which is wild, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he just
wild.
Won, and
yeah.
Then he was kind of biting the other horse and biting his rein.
Right,
and
he was not – he still had a lot left. He had so much gas left in the tank. Yep. As they say, he had a lot of horse left.
He did. Maybe that'll serve him better in a longer
right.
run
yeah,
there.
That was a great event, though. Now – you know, like if you're NBC or, you know, and NBC, I believe, has the Preakness. I think the Belmont has moved, though. I don't think NBC has the Belmont
okay.
anymore. But anyway, you're hoping that Rich Strike would do it again and you win the Preakness. And he wins
right,
the Preakness,
so you have a chance
so
at
you
triple
have a triple crown.
Crown
because
right.
then the audience really kind of splits and it kind of fades away if you don't have a triple crown
yeah.
for the offing.
I mean – I'm curious, after coming off of this win, like what the odds are going to be on
yeah.
this horse, because it still is, I would say, objectively. Now, granted, just won the Kentucky Derby, but objectively, they've had a lot of information about this horse
sure.
that led to the conclusion that it was
80-1.
80-1. Right. Which, by the way, I don't even know how that horse wasn't even 1,000,000-1. I mean, it literally got in the race on Friday.
Right.
It was not supposed to win that race
right.
at
right.
all.
Yeah,
and it did. Sometimes that's what they say. Sports. That's why it's the best. Sometimes you can't make these things up.
Wow, it was. Yeah, they needed Al Michaels. Do you believe in miracles?
Do you believe? That was as big a miracle as you could have there. Your Bruins tying the series with Carolina. I know you're hooked on that.
Yeah, two in a row at home. Really, and their best, you know, arguably their best player, Charlie McAvoy. They're a great defenseman. They go out for warmups just before they actually start the first period of play. He tests positive for COVID. So he's out. So he's out for that game. So yesterday afternoon, very late in the morning, because it was a 1 o'clock opening faceoff, they lose their best player. Very, very important guy. Power play, top defenseman, great player. Charlie McAvoy out of Boston University. He's out. So now you got to shift everything around. You
right.
put a guy in the lineup that wasn't expected to be in. Anyhow, they won. It's been a home ice series so far. It's 2-2 going back to Carolina. Tomorrow, there were some great games on yesterday. Not just hockey, NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, James Harden went off last night for Philly.
James Harden.
The Sixers.
He'd been written off for dead by a lot of people. And he said, I still got a little something in there.
He was writing his Hall of Fame speech.
Yeah.
And then they put him back in uniform. He was terrific.
Yeah.
He was great. The Celtics lost a heartbreaker the day before to the Bucks on a controversial call. The end of the game.
I like that Celtics team. And I'm not just saying that because
no,
I know you
yeah.
love this. I like that. I love Tatum. I'm a big Jason Tatum guy.
He had
guy.
A tough day Saturday.
He did.
Yeah.
But he's been throughout the playoffs. He's been
at one point,
pretty good.
At one point, Nathan, he was like, he just couldn't.
Could
he couldn't
buy a
throw
bucket.
It in the ocean. He was like yeah. 2 for 16.
John Starks, game seven.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
a John
right.
Starks
yeah,
game
yeah,
seven
right.
performance.
Yeah. But anyway, there was that Sixer game last night was great. You know, I hadn't watched Miami a lot.
Yeah.
During the season, and everybody kept saying, boy, they're great. They're the best team in the East. Boy, I don't know. I think the best team in the East is coming out of that Bucks-Celtics series.
I agree completely.
I really do, yeah.
Miami is a
so that's
very
a big game
good
tonight.
Team.
Game four tonight.
Yeah, big game. The NBA is starting to pick up, and I think the Warriors-Memphis series is a fun series. The Warriors
yeah.
put up 140 on them the other night.
It was amazing. Yeah, Klay Thompson was amazing.
Steph Poole.
Yeah. The thing about the NBA, I thought that hurt it a little bit, and this is procedure-wise, is that they slowed the pace of the series down. Now, in the NHL, it's every other night.
That's what it should be.
And like the Celtic in that Warriors Grizzly series, Celtics Bucks, they played early in the week and then they didn't play until Saturday.
Yeah.
Now they're gonna step it up a little bit. So I think they lost a little momentum.
Well, especially because that Warriors one was 1-1 and you had a big comeback for Memphis. And
yeah.
I'm with you. There was the fact that there was a day. What was it? Was it Thursday?
There were no NBA
where there were
games.
No games.
Yeah,
is
there,
up.
There wasn't an NBA game. I think.
How does that happen? That should not happen.
That happens. Yeah.
Should not
at
have
this
happened.
Time of the year. That's what the war to win the Stanley Cup physically is unbelievable. I mean, those guys, you ever see them at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs? Not only do they have these long beards, but they also have gashes and cuts and stitches and black eyes on, no teeth, I mean, and everything like that. And they had a full mouth of teeth at the start of the playoffs. They play every other night,
yeah,
whether they're traveling or not.
They're getting after it.
Yeah.
All right, so the weather finally has turned for us. And since Bo's not here, I'll ask a Bo question. What does this mean for you with the horses, sun, warmth, beautiful, drying out of the ground? Oh, not, you don't have to worry about shoes coming off
in
the muck.
I told you, you have to worry at this time of the year. And we certainly do, and I'm sure other people do that are into this. You have to worry that the grass is sweet. The grass gets very sweet right now because it grows very quickly. And you have a lot of dew on it in the morning, and you have a lot of moisture.
I'm gonna write this down. Sweet
and it
grass,
gets very, very sweet. So it's almost like you can put your horse into almost like a diabetic coma if they have too much, because they're gonna have their head into the grass all the time. Now we use kind of a muzzle sometimes that we put on them.
Yeah, so limit them.
Limit the grass intake.
Yeah.
So we're
you don't want your horse going Nick Harris 7,000 calories of grass right now.
No, I don't need them eating the lawn down. Yeah, you're right, 7,000. And that we check their feet when they come in every day, because if those feet are hot, then we know there's a problem.
That's the tell.
They're nice and cool. We're all right. We're good. You know, get them in their stalls. But they had a nice day today.
I bet.
They had a beautiful day today.
Glorious gallivanting around. I'm sure they did not. Hopefully. Well, I'll be putting out the all cool feet vibes for you, Jim. That's what we'll do for you. All right, coming back, we're going to get your thoughts on the draft, the team's biggest needs as they remain going forward before training camp. We got a lot coming up for you here. Talk about the schedule coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to do something rare here on CBD. We're going to talk to the people a little bit, Jim. We're going to open up the phone lines. We've got Matt Miller from ESPN, their draft analyst as well. So a lot coming up here. So stay tuned. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome back into Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and the voice of your Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan, coming to you from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea. By the way, if you're buying or selling your home with Howard Hanna Real Estate Services, it's always a winning strategy. If you plan to make a move this season, we have got you covered, because at Howard Hanna, every day is game day. Visit howardhanna.com/gobrowns today. And we're, like I said, Jim Donovan with us for the full show here today. And so, Jim, we've talked a little bit about this draft. We know that the rookies, we get to look at them. We get to see them come out here, get on the field, see how they look in their Browns uniforms this Friday with the beginning of the rookie mini camp. But to recap it here, the Browns go 3 picks in the 3rd round. Martin Emerson Jr., now MJ Emerson, out of Mississippi State. The corner, Alex Wright, the defensive end from the University of Alabama, Birmingham. David Bell, the wide receiver from Purdue. Those are your 3rd rounders. In the 4th, you get Perrion Winfrey, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma, a man who needs no introduction in this town anymore. Kicker Cade York from LSU. And then in the 5th, running back Jerome Ford from Cincinnati. And in the 6th, Michael Woods, wide receiver, Oklahoma. And in the 7th, Isaiah Thomas, a guy that many people consider to be one of the steals of the 7th round, which is, I guess, a good thing for him. And Dawson Deaton, the offensive lineman from Texas Tech, who was at the Shrine Bowl with our coaching staff and assistant offensive line coach Scott Peters. So that's the group, 9 players. Let's start there. Were you surprised that the Browns drafted 9 players in this draft?
Yes, absolutely. I really was, considering what they had going into the draft. I mean, I thought that they would move around a little bit. They always do, and most teams do. But I thought it would be, and it was, a little bit for next year. I know they picked up a couple of draft picks going into next year's draft, which is always good. But, yeah, I was very surprised that they ended up with that kind of business with 9 players coming in. Very, very competitive situation. typically you draft a group of rookies. They come in and because you drafted them, it's pretty good that they're going to make the team, right?
Yeah, typically.
Nine guys here are not going to make the team. I would dare say that they're not going to make the team, considering where the team is right now. So you have raised the competitiveness on the roster just to get a spot on the roster here.
Oh, yeah.
Get recognized here. So just the fact that you were drafted by the Browns, the current way that the Browns roster is set up, does not mean that you're going to just automatically make it because they picked you over that weekend.
No, I think, and if you're looking at this group, you know, you feel very good, obviously, about MJ Emerson, Alex Wright, David Bell, I'd say Perry and Winfrey, and Cade York. They like Jerome Ford a lot, very productive at Cincinnati. But if you're, you know, Michael Woods, Isaiah Thomas, Dawson Deaton, in the past, not only would you have been a lock to make the roster, but that you might have been playing football for the Cleveland Browns in week number one. And now I think it will be a, you know, an uphill climb to make the roster and to prove that you belong here.
So here's what I think in the early part of the draft. I think the guys that are going to be very, very critical, the kicker's going to be really critical.
Yep.
He's going to be critical right away. I mean, he's brought in to kick in an area. They need a kicker. They're going to be in tight games. We were last year. We were frantic near the end of the season because our kicker was not really handling that situation all that well. I mean, he got through it, but we weren't there. There's no doubt about it. So he is going to be vital right away. But I would say with what we have and what we haven't done yet, and I don't know if we're going to do it, I would say David Bell becomes very critical.
Yep.
And Alex Wright becomes very, very critical, especially if Jadeveon Clowney is not here, which he isn't right now, and we don't have a deal. And if he doesn't come here, Alex Wright's importance becomes even more. But David Bell and Alex Wright would become very, very important, I would think. Now, I would think Winfrey would be put into a rotation.
Sure.
Type of situation where you roll through a lot of those guys. But those two guys would seem to be very important. And Bell's got a tremendous opportunity as the days go by here. And what I go back to building of the Browns and how they were really so excited to get him and told him that.
Oh, yeah.
The head coach told him that.
That's
I saw you and I went in and said, hey, listen, we got to have this guy.
That, to me, is as effusive of praise as you're going to hear from Kevin Stefanski when he said, I believe, thanks for believing me. Oh, I believe in you. And then I wanted to get you.
Right.
We have to leave this day. He likes him a lot. Obviously, big plans for him. I got to talk with Chad O'Shea, our wide receiver coach, which is on the BPA, which you can check out, about 20 minutes talking about our whole receiver room. He loves David Bell, and I think they envision him, like of the names you mentioned, Cade York coming in, he is a starter, right?
Absolutely.
They cut the other kickers. He's the kicker.
Very, very important guy.
I think David Bell has an excellent chance to be a starter from day one in what I would call the Browns' 11 personnel packages. So in three receiver sets, and I think the vision is for him, while he can win outside, to be inside. And I think that that's where they think he can be very productive. So those two guys right now, if you're saying who's day one starters, I would agree with you. I think those two, Bell and York. Wright could be, but I don't think that's the ideal scenario.
Uh-huh.
Perry and Winfrey could be. I mean, that room is as wide open
as
it gets.
Right,
you got Jordan Elliott. You got Tommy Togiai. You brought in Taven Bryan. You've got Sheldon Day, and now you have Winfrey. Winfrey's a guy who might be the most disruptive pass rusher of all of them. So I certainly in a rotation early, but that's a room that's wide open.
Yeah.
That's one that we really don't know how it's going to look. MJ Emerson, ironically, is your first pick here in this draft. And he could compete on the outside with the trade of Troy Hill. It looks to me like, as of now, you know, the Browns are going to go with Denzel Ward and Greg Newsome in two cornerback in their base defense. And then in the nickel, Ward and then Greg will kick inside. And you'll have a competition, I would imagine.
Greedy Williams.
A.J. Green, who played very well for you last year. And now, you know, MJ Emerson, who is an outside corner. I still think we need to add somebody to that room who is a pure slot corner, as it were.
Yeah, I think so, and we'll see how that plays out. Back to Bell just for a second, and a lot of people, when you listen, talk shows, things like that, post-draft situation, a lot of people were really, well, he's not fast. He didn't run well, and he ran even slower at his pro day. I have to tell you something. I can't get wrapped up in all of that, the speed, because to some guys, yeah, Tyreek Hill, definitely I see it on the field, no doubt about it. He can run past people. I hope Anthony Schwartz does that because that was his calling card coming in.
It's got to be
but
his calling
fact
card.
But the fact that I don't necessarily look – I think it's important how they find their way to get open. Can they get open? And the thing of – and then can they catch the ball? That's what it's all about. And that's what this guy does. He catches the ball and he wins the football. So the speed factor I think sometimes people get really wrapped up on pre-draft – post, you know, on campus workout, pro day workout, things like that. He didn't run well. Because I think once you get out on the field, it kind of negates all of that.
You're playing football.
You just find an open spot, catch the football, and go. Everybody looks very quick once they catch it and go, you know?
Yeah. And he made
David Njoku looks very, very quick to me when he catches the ball and gets those big legs, that big stride going.
That's right.
You know, but I don't know what he is on the clock. And at that point on the day, I don't care what he is on the clock. A, he caught it. B, he's running away from people. And that's the way that is.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way that is, I think. So I wouldn't get all wrapped up in that, what he ran on the 40.
I wonder where Jerry Rice would have been drafted in today's NFL because they would have said, what does he run the 40? 4.6? He's a 4.6 guy?
Absolutely.
I never saw him get caught. I got to grow up watching a lot of Jerry Rice.
I mean, do they time Cooper Kupp with a sundial?
Right.
Or a watch? I mean, but yet, look at the guy.
Matter.
You can't cover him. You can't cover him.
Speaking of the Triple Crown, he won it this year. Receptions, yards, and touchdowns at the receiver position. Led the league in all three categories. Now, they're very excited about David Bell and what he can bring to this offense. And, you know, you go back and you look at his biggest games, you know, Michigan State, Penn State, Iowa, the Buckeyes.
Yeah.
He had 11-plus catches in a couple of those games. He averaged over 20 yards a catch against the best competition that he would face that year. And I think goes along. Guy's a football player, bottom line.
Well, I remember watching him against Michigan State because I was really anxious to see Michigan State the week. It was right after the Michigan win.
Yep.
Right? And they came out and they went to, I think that game was at West Lafayette that day. And David Bell was very, very good that day.
Yeah.
Purdue was tremendous that day, and he was a big part of them being tremendous that day as they really handled Michigan State in that game.
Yeah, in that game, he went for over 200 yards in that game. He had a monster season, a monster career there last year, 1,286 yards receiving. He averaged 14 yards a catch in college, but as you said, he was biggest, what I think people like about it, I know talking here to the guys in the Browns, biggest in the big games.
Yeah.
You mentioned Michigan State, 11 catches, 217 yards, and a touchdown. He had 11 for 240 and a touchdown against Purdue. He had 11 catches again against Ohio State for 103. So a very productive guy in big, big games and against the best competition that he saw. Notre Dame, though, 7 for 64. So the Golden Domers,
you know, I'm trying. Yeah, I was remembering that day, what happened in that game that day. I think they had a quarterback situation that day, where they had a quarterback in, a quarterback out. That changes the dynamics in that game.
That would make sense because he goes 8 for 134 right. against Oregon State, 6 for 121 and 3 against Connecticut, 7 for 64 against Notre Dame, comes out of that 6 for 120 against Minnesota, and then 11 for 240 and a touchdown against Iowa.
Yeah, I remember that game, and I do believe there was a quarterback, either their starter got hurt and was in and out, but I remember late in the game, and they were trying to rally in that game, and they had a newer quarterback in for Purdue, and you know, they weren't able to do it.
Yeah. But I like that. So if you after this draft, and we went into it, we knew we needed to get some guys in the edge room. You get two. You get Alex Wright. You get Isaiah Thomas. You need to get a defensive tackle. You did that, Perrion Winfrey. You needed a corner, Martin Emerson. Now, we didn't know it was going to be the first pick there,
right.
But with the trade of Troy Hill, it actually became a lot more clear that you were going to do that. And the Browns picked up not only a 2023 fourth in the trade with Minnesota, but a 2023 fifth in the trade for Troy Hill, giving them nine players this year plus two picks next year. As you sit here with this roster now, it does feel like you could run out there on opening day and play football, but there are still some things that you probably would like to add. So what jumps out to you right now is the biggest things you want to add here to this Cleveland Browns roster between now and you know, hopefully the mandatory minicamp, and if not, then training camp?
Well, I would love to see, you know, a pass rusher and I would love to see Clowney
yes,
be here. I
same.
Really would. I would Jadeveon really
Clowney.
Love to see him.
Yep.
I think that would complete them up front and certainly give them what they had last year, which was very good and very, very good at the end of the year. And I think it was only on the rise. I think he realized that. So that would be very comforting to me that he would come back and
same.
He would be there. I was interested to read over the weekend that I think it was Mary Kay wrote the article that the Browns might be content at wide receiver, that maybe they weren't going to be so pressed into looking for a more of a veteran wide receiver to come in, that they were pretty comfortable with where they are. I guess I, going into the thing, thought that there would be another. I thought there would be a combination of receivers. I thought that they would go early, which in their draft they did, to get David
yes.
Bell. And then I thought that there would be a veteran wide receiver coming in, and you can take a pick as who it was going to be. I know a lot of people with their heart wanted to see Landry come back. But I still think I might still investigate that.
I think so, too. Let's go
but
back.
There was some thought this weekend that, no, they feel good, you know, about what they have.
I do think they feel good about what they have. I think to your point earlier about Anthony Schwartz, that he is unique in that he is your vertical guy. Now, mm-hmm. Donovan Peoples-Jones for his career averages over 18 yards a catch, but he's not a traditional lineup and the other defense is saying, oh, boy, right. He's going to run by us. Now, he makes big plays through great route running, and he's a great contested catch guy. But the idea that this offense is going to believe it's, you know, field stretching, take the top off, roll solely to Schwartz, I think that's where you could get a little concerned. But now he was a third-round pick a year ago. You invested in him to do this. But I think your point is well taken that, you know, Will Fuller is still out there. DeSean Jackson's out there. T.Y. Hilton, veterans who have done this
right.
in the past around the league and that would command that kind of respect. I do think that is something that the Browns will still investigate. Will that lead to anything? That I don't know, but investigate it, I think absolutely.
Will Fuller, of course, played with DeSean in Houston, played well with
very
him.
Well.
Yeah, played very, very well
yes.
with him. Just ran into some injury problems, certainly when he was in Houston. I think he broke his leg, didn't he, one year?
Leg injuries. He's had hand injuries yeah, down right. with Miami, which didn't go the way that
right.
anybody wanted
right.
it to. And so,
but there was a definite comfort factor there. I can remember when Watson and Fuller were together and played the Browns, it was tough to defend against him.
Yeah.
I just would be a little bit more comfortable with that they had another veteran guy in there. Then there's no doubt they have got some guys that are very, very interesting. Donovan Peoples-Jones, very interesting guy.
Yep.
Schwartz, wow. Big, big ceiling there. Hopefully he can do it. There were peaks of it last year. But, you know, I don't know that Cooper can carry the whole load, right?
Correct. And I think that's – and he is, I think, best suited to be – if you're going to take away, again, from, like, for example, what they do in Minnesota when Kevin was there, and mm-hmm. you had Stephon Diggs and you had Adam Thielen. He's much more of a Thielen – then he is a Stephon Diggs. And
right.
so I think that's the compliment. That's the piece that you're looking yeah. to get in there. But I think Amari Cooper is going to have a very, very nice season here. And the chemistry between he and Deshaun Watson, I'm told, is already looking very good here in this early phase. Again, on air, we're not talking about anything like that. But just they've gotten along and gotten off to a very good start. So I'm with you. Receiver, Clowney, number one on the list, right? Alex Wright's a guy that they feel, even when you hear them talk about it, they loved him. Total consensus
right.
in the building. We wanted him, went in the draft 78, and all of our scenarios that we wanted, it was Alex Wright, and they get to call his name. But I think the feeling is that he's a guy who is still developing, growing into his body, which has undergone a monstrous transformation in 4 years, and I think mm-hmm. still room to grow there. But I think the idea would be that you would want to bring him along more slowly than say, okay,
right.
you've got to get out there day one and play it. Because I think Chase Winovich is – first of all, I love that guy. I think he's going to be a ton of fun for everybody here in the media, and mm-hmm. I think he's going to be fun on the field. But I think you will see him more in that Tack McKinley third pass rusher type of a role.
Now, the thing about him, you have to really go back last year. New England really changed their defense last year going into the season, and they changed their personnel. He became a victim of that, I think, both in scheme
yep.
and in the people that they brought in. Judon came in there, played
yep.
very well. I mean, you know, they brought back, you know, the linebacker
Van Noy
came back. And so there was less of the pie for him to eat. Whereas before that, I think that's when his numbers looked, wow, this guy's an interesting guy. He had 11 sacks on the year. He was outstanding on special teams for them. But I know he wants to play. He makes his money on defense. He wants to be out there. So I'm not saying you give him a pass. But there was a great difference in what New England was doing defensively as to what they were doing when he first came to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his first two seasons, he was highly productive.
Right. Yeah. I think
those
when we were
sacks.
There, Nathan, I don't remember him even when we were there this past year. I don't remember him being a part of the puzzle that
no.
much even in that game.
No. And yeah. I missed that one with COVID. And so I watched that from home. And by the end of the day, I was
God
happy that I hadn't gone on
you.
That road trip, Jim, to be perfectly honest
with you.
If you
were going to pick one, that was the one.
That was a good one to skip.
And let me say this. If you were going to miss a flight and you and I are both white knucklers, we're
yeah.
a member of the White Knuckle Crew,
oh,
that's where
yeah.
we're really going to miss Deke.
Very calm. Nonplussed
really?
By
yeah,
the turbulence.
Deke, yeah. Now, that was a rough flight. There were like tornado warnings in the Providence area.
Yeah.
Where do we land, everybody, when we go there? Not Boston. We land in Providence.
That's right.
Unbelievable coming down. And I remember we got off, we were coming to the hotel, and a bunch of the security people came up to me and they said, how did you do on the flight? And I said, it was a little bumpy. And they said, we were all sick in the back of the plane. It was really bumpy.
Well,
It was another reason I'm glad. Yeah. It was not a good weekend.
I mean, it sounds like that would have made it onto our Mount Rushmore. I mean, we had the Cincinnati, which
will never be topped.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Denver, wasn't it Denver where?
Denver Part 2.
Denver where?
The second year.
Yeah, where I was pretty sure we were crashing.
We dropped a good 15, 20,000 feet.
That's probably an exaggeration.
It's
but
a way
it was
big
a
exaggeration.
Lot. It was enough where you're like, are we flying anymore? Yeah. No, that was a real one. That was a very scary one.
Right.
But we're here. That's the thing about flights. It's really binary.
Every time you land, it's a good one.
Exactly. That's it. It's like there's just one criteria, really. Have we survived? Yes. Good. We've done it. All right. We will be back with more. Having a great time already here with Jim Donovan. Still to come, Matt Miller. We're going to take some phone calls. When we come back, we're going to take a look at this schedule. What it could mean for your Cleveland Browns here. Is there kind of just leaking things out? One game here, two games there. So far, nothing Browns related.
No mystery on Monday night. Huh?
No.
Monday night's out.
And we'll talk about that, doing something they've never done before. I think I might actually like it. We'll see. All right, more Cleveland Browns Daily here on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Browns fan Sugardale is sponsoring a grand opening event at the newest Meijer location. Visit the Brunswick store this Friday, May the 13th, for samples and giveaways and special appearances by Browns alumni and chomps. For store locations and more details, visit sugardale.com/events. Nathan Zagura and the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan, with you on this Monday as the Browns remain in phase two, able to get out on the grass, offense separated from defense, but go through things. No helmets, nothing like that, but good to get out there and at least start to install this offense and get things in and the defense for Joe Woods on that side of the ball. But we got the rookie minicamp coming up this Friday. We've got the NFL schedule release this Thursday, although games matriculating out as they do one at a time, a little taste here. And they announced today the first Monday Night Football doubleheader. It's going to happen in week two, September the 19th, with two games being played at the same time for the first time. They had been doing those Monday night ones at 7 and then 10, but the ratings for the 10 o'clock ones were not as good.
Understandable.
Very understandable. Yeah. So now we're going to have Tennessee at the Bills kicking at 7:15 on ESPN. The Eagles will play host to the Minnesota Vikings in the second game starting at 8:30 on ABC. What do you think about that?
Well, I totally understand that because even though I live on that side of the clock and that second game was kind of in my wheelhouse, you know, I still struggle to make it past halftime in that game.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was a very good game. Typically, it was always the Raiders out in Oakland.
And like the Broncos.
Yeah, the Broncos or the Chargers when they were in San Diego. So it was always a pretty well-contested game. You know, a very, very competitive game, exciting game. But it was so late. So I kind of get this. I kind of like this.
I do like it. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have the ability to split their screens or you can have,
well,
now you can watch
Sunday,
it.
Right? They do it Sunday, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So why not Monday?
Why not?
Monday.
So there it is. That's the first one that we've known. So they've leaked some things out about a few games here or there. We have not seen the Browns yet mentioned. So our 17 games are still, at this point, not disclosed. We will find out our home opener on Thursday at 6 p.m., the full schedule at 8. So if we open on the road, or we'll find out if we're at somebody else's home opener, maybe we'll find out two of the games at 6 o'clock there if we're playing some detective work there. So the Browns' opponents this year at home, Bengals, Ravens, Steelers in the AFC North, Tampa Bay and Tom Brady, New Orleans, I think a very good Chargers team. Oh, house divided. The Patriots come to town, and then the Jets away. Bengals, Ravens, Steelers, Houston, Carolina, Atlanta, Buffalo in a big game, Miami, and the Commanders of Washington. Mm. So, all right, Jim, outside of the AFC North games, what game are you looking forward to the most?
I get the whole Tom Brady thing, Tampa Bay, but because that Charger game was such a great game last year and such an ouch game for us the way that ended, but that has the potential. I love watching their guy play. I anticipate love watching our guy play the quarterback position. But that game was so wide open. It was unbelievable how wide open it was. It's unbelievable to think we had like a 14-point lead, you know, pretty deep into the third quarter. That
yeah.
Chubb hit a big run, and we were off and running. And how quickly that thing turned around.
And they went for it on fourth and two on their own, like 20.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, wait, that's right.
And then they scored that drive, was also on a fourth down. I think it was a 4th and 7 was the last play of that drive they scored on.
So that game, I would think, you know, from the sheer, you know, look at how many points that could be scored in that game and the way they could go up and down the field, that would be amazing. The other thing, when that game would be played, would be what time of the year it will be played
sure.
in. You know, the Chargers coming here. Is it going to be later in the year where you're going to have weather involved in it? But if it's early in the year, if it's a great day down there, or a great night down there. Wow. The potential to see points go on the board in that one will be amazing.
And they're going for it. I mean, as they should. Yeah, they bring in Khalil Mack and J.C. Jackson, which I was stunned that the Patriots let him walk a very good corner there. So they've loaded up on defense to try to prevent some of those outbursts, but I think that would be a great game. Tampa Bay coming, obviously. Tom Brady should be the last time Tom Brady ever plays in First Energy Stadium. Should be. You say that. Should be. You don't know. Patriots, I know you got to be looking forward to that one. On the away slate.
We should definitely be looking forward for a little payback.
Yes,
in that game
after what happened.
That was humiliating that day. And it's nothing that the Patriots did other than they just beat you. Okay, they came out and they beat you that day. Mac Jones looked like Tom Brady that day, didn't he?
It was
unbelievable. Their receivers that day, Nathan, as good as Mac Jones was, their receivers made 5 great catches in that game that you would just go, you couldn't blame it. Denzel Ward or Newsom or anybody or Greedy Williams or anybody. They were in position perfect to make a play.
And Jacoby Myers would do
unbelievable catches they made. Yeah.
That game,
Hunter Henry.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't we go down the field? We scored on 4th down, Baker to Austin Hooper.
Yeah,
and then we should have left.
I'll tell you, do you remember we scored like on 1st down or 2nd down? And the ball juggled away from Njoku,
yep.
I think.
Yeah. Yep.
And then all of a sudden you start running out of downs. Now Baker almost got picked on
third down. Yep.
Right? And then boom, he hit it on 4th down.
To hoop.
7-0.
Leave.
And then New England, they had like 3rd and 13. 3rd and 9.
And kept converting.
3rd and 11, and they kept converting and went right down the field and scored. And then Baker threw a pick, and that was it.
Literally. That was.
Kyle Duggar, I think.
He was thrown to his right sideline.
Wouldn't you say that the Chargers are in a group of teams with the Browns that absolutely kick themselves in the backside and say, how the heck did we not make the playoffs last year?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The Colts, okay, us, probably Baltimore, but for different reasons, right? A lot of injuries.
Sure.
Things like that. But you take a look at these teams like us with that talent, the Chargers, that how they came down the stretch. Definitely the Colts with 2 layups to get in. You know, definitely the last one at Jacksonville.
At Jacksonville.
You walk away and you're not in.
They said, Carson Wentz, you're gone. Like, you cannot play here anymore after that. That's it.
His exit interview was really the exit the next day.
Goodbye.
They told him, hit the exit.
Yeah, hit the exit. Right. That Chargers team is so talented. And even the game they had with the Raiders late in the year where it was to get into the playoffs. It was the last game of the year.
The last game of the year.
And Herbert was unbelievable.
Amazing.
And they lost.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost. That's right.
That was an absolutely wild game. So that's a good one.
One of the great Sunday night games, I would have
probably
to
one
say.
Of the best.
Yeah, I mean, I would put our Ravens Monday night game a couple of years ago. Remember the Ravens?
Yeah.
Unbelievable game.
Where he comes out of the locker room on 4th down.
Yeah, the Willis Reed game from Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
But the football part of that, as you're just a football fan, you pull up a chair on a Monday night, and people have been saying, nobody watches Monday night anymore, but, boy, you would watch that one. And that Sunday night game, that Raiders-Chargers game, with what was riding on the game was amazing.
Yeah, I've just decided, based on that comment you just made, that I don't want the Ravens at home on Monday night because I am still traumatized from the block walk-off of Travis Coons. That was on a Monday night when they returned the blocked field goal, right?
Oh,
for a touchdown to walk us off
on a
– that was a Monday
right.
night.
That was a Monday night game, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that
no.
was a Monday night game.
No more. None of that. All right, how many primetime games? You look at the schedule and you think anybody in our division could be a primetime game, but the Bengals defending AFC champs, the Ravens, Tampa Bay here, the Chargers here,
Buffalo.
Patriots, Buffalo away, absolutely, and then anybody in our division away. I don't think anybody else, unless they feel compelled to do, like on a Thursday night.
Steelers, Browns.
Or I was even going to say the return to Houston of Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Do you wonder, well, because do the you know, because we are an appealing team nationally.
Yes.
But do you wonder if there's some hesitancy right now about putting us there, wondering what our quarterback situation will be at the time?
So here's what I would think, and I could be completely wrong about this. The NFL's making the schedule.
Yeah, right.
I would guess, like, if all our schedule shows up with us having, let's call it, 3 primetime games in our first 7,
yeah,
I think they're saying he's not going to be suspended. Now, if we have no primetime games in the first 6,
yeah,
then I'll say, yeah.
Yeah, right. There you go. I was wondering about that. I'm wondering how they take a look at that, because on paper right now you say, hey, marquee team, very good team, very competitive. We could definitely see what you just went through on their projected schedule. Hey, put them in there. That's going to be a great game.
Yeah.
That's a marquee game, whether it's at 4:25, 4 o'clock, sure, you know, 8:30, whatever.
I keep seeing a lot of people suggesting that we're going to play on Christmas again. Do you think they would do it? Would they make a team play on Christmas 2 years in a row?
Well, they're going to have 3 games, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Last year they had one.
We're either going to play Christmas Eve.
There's no way they would
play Christmas.
Let me ask
Day.
You this. Okay, let me.
There's a chance for a Monday nighter, but I think we're going to play on one.
I don't think they're going to make the Browns play away on Christmas again, right? I mean, they have some sense of like decency.
I would like to
of decorum
think that would be the case.
This is a society, after all, that we're in here. Okay, all right. Good.
Jason, if we do play on Christmas, I will have Cheryl make the incredible shots that she made last year for postgame.
Yeah, we had some libations.
Unbelievable.
Not me.
What? Hold on.
Not me.
What were they called?
Yeah, what were they called?
Peanut butter and jellies.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That sounds delightful.
Screwball with cran apple juice.
Oh, sounds delightful.
Worked out well for me.
It really
was quite happy.
It took the sting out of that last series.
Yeah, there was a sting. Yeah.
There was a sting. Everybody was moping around, right? And they really were. But yeah, I mean, it was a holiday. They lost. The mathematics looked very grim.
Yes,
right?
Very grim
at that point for postseason. And I went over to the bag of tricks, where normally my file folders have everybody's 3 deep, and pulled out a wonderful Yeti thermos. And I think we've really turned it into.
She turns around and goes, shots? And I'm like,
yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Where the hell did you pull that from?
Yeah. I think you guys were in a much better place an hour
after that
game than certainly where
at
I was.
At that time, but to be in Lambeau Field, right?
Was very. Unbelievable. Yeah. And it was an incredible atmosphere. It's just those are long plummet. You know, a very disappointing game leads to a very somber bus ride and plane flight. And
yeah.
It was Christmas.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
So that's where we were.
I mean, could it be Thanksgiving night?
All right. We're good on holidays for a year. That's what I think.
I remember when they did play on Thanksgiving and Barry Sanders put on one. I thought he was going to break the NFL rushing record that day. It was up in Pontiac. And they played. It was Bud Carson's first year as the head coach of the Browns, and the Browns were rolling. I mean, they were rolling towards the division title, and they got blown out by a pretty substandard Lions team. Imagine that.
Yeah.
But Barry Sanders ran around them, through them, zigzagged around them. He was well over 200 yards that day. I thought he was going to break the rushing record. And it started a bad trajectory for Bud Carson's Browns, and they kind of limped into the playoffs, albeit getting to the AFC Championship game. But it was Thanksgiving Day, and I will say this, the Lions put on an incredible Thanksgiving meal before the game.
That's
it
nice.
It was absolute turkey when stuffing and all the fixings, as they say. It was great.
Yeah, I can't say that I felt like I was having a great Christmas meal.
I mean, I put together something for Christmas Eve, but I don't know if it would be a 5-star.
Christmas Eve. There should have been a building the Browns about our Christmas Eve meal.
Jason, on Christmas Day, did bring wonderful stuff, but not with the oomph that came out of the Yeti thermos.
No,
in postgame.
This sounds like the Yeti thermos was the MVP of Christmas.
It was.
Being perfectly honest about it.
Cheryl Donovan was the MVP.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, when we come back, hour number 2, already an hour through. Man, time flies when you're having fun. Maybe we have the thermos. Who knows? Listen, it's as rare. You don't get to do it often. So if you want to do it, now is the time. You can call us 216-578-0850 for a special edition of Ask CBD. You can also tweet us your questions at Browns_daily using the hashtag AskCBD or get on the phones. This is rare. Take advantage. Once Uncle Bo comes back, no phones for you. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome into hour number two of Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan, and we're about to open up the phone lines already full, but first, Elk & Elk, serious lawyers for serious injuries. Call 1-800-ELK-OHIO for your free case review. Elk & Elk is a proud partner of the Cleveland Browns. Also, some NFL news coming out of New York right now. The Giants, as expected, released Pro Bowl cornerback James Bradbury, who has a $22 million salary cap charge, meaning Joe Schoen can save $11.5 million by designating a post-June 1st release. He also will have 1.4 dead cap in 2023. Interest for the talented 28-year-old Pro Bowler is expected to be significant. And I think we're going to start to see some of this after the draft. Veterans come available and maybe move around the league. I don't think the Browns would be interested at the price point that he would require, but he's somebody that's going to command a lot of attention, and he's one of the top, you know, corners in the league right now.
I thought he was their best corner.
Yeah, he was.
He was their best corner. Yeah.
Interesting that they are not said they failed to find a trade partner to take on his contract. They've officially released him. He should command a very heavy market in
free
agency.
That's going around these days, huh?
Yeah. Apparently so. All right. Let's go now. Let's do it, Gibby. Let's bring him in. Gibby,
we're doing phone calls.
Are you ready for this?
I
don't know if we're
not
ready.
I hope Madison's ready. She's running the board today for the first time.
Good luck.
Good luck, Madison.
Have the dump button ready. And if we need to dump, just interrupt the segment to tell us that you've dumped so that way I don't go to another phone call. So,
all right, those are the rules.
Yeah.
There it is.
Hey, try to keep it clean, folks.
Yes,
come on.
Listen, it's on you. We're giving you an opportunity.
I'm letting
you want it to happen again.
Yeah.
We've got to be good.
The last time it worked out just fine.
It was great.
So we'll see here. You can also tweet us your questions here at Browns_daily using the hashtag AskCBD. Craig in South Carolina to lead us off. Craig, you are on Cleveland Browns Daily with Nathan Segura and Jim Donovan.
Hey, Nathan and Jimmy, this is Craig calling from North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Lovely. What's up, Craig?
I'm so excited about the Browns. I've been a Browns fan since 1964, and I got to watch Jim Brown play, and I've loved him ever since. I lived and grew up in Canton, Ohio, and just live and die the Browns. But I wanted to first congratulate you, Nathan, on being selected to be the color commentator alongside Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are the absolute best at what you do. I've been very blessed to travel around the country since leaving Canton, and I've watched other commentators, and you are by far the best. So, kudos
to
you.
Thank you.
One thing that you talked about earlier in the session were our 9 draft picks, and those coupled with the roster that we have currently, we're pretty well stacked, and I'm really excited about what we have going. The one thing I didn't hear anybody talk about was what ultimately could happen to Baker Mayfield, and do you think that part of the strategy would be all these picks that we would package Baker and some players to help move him to another team?
You know, I wondered about that on the opening night of the draft.
Yes.
What was going on, maybe. And I don't know how serious it was. It was percolating on that opening night, that Thursday night, and certainly Friday night, when a lot of people were saying, okay, Carolina's made their pick the night before at 6, didn't take a quarterback, here we go. And I was wondering, even when they selected the defensive back right away, I thought maybe there's a deal here where they're somebody that's currently on the roster, maybe a defensive back, is going as part
sure.
of a package deal.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem – it still seems, Craig, like the thing that might be hanging the whole deal up is not the package, it's the contract and how that's going to be divvied up, and if it's going to be divvied up at all, and how firm the Browns are going to stand to getting a deal without having to eat a lot of that, if any of it.
And I think you're exactly right. It comes down to that contract situation. And look – 18.9 or 19 million, we'll call it, for a starting quarterback. And Baker Mayfield is, without question, I think one of the 32 best quarterbacks on the planet. Is not actually a lot. But teams, I think maybe because it's the last year of his deal,
right.
there has been some turmoil around him that they're not guaranteed to have the investment extend beyond this year. They're not comfortable yet making an extension beyond this year. And so that becomes a thing. Now, I will say, coming out of the draft due to some of their maneuverings, the Browns have 2 threes, 2 fours, and 2 fives next year, because they have an extra third from Kwesi Adofo-Mensah becoming the general manager of the Minnesota Vikings. They picked up an extra fourth in a trade with Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and the Minnesota Vikings. And then they picked up the extra fifth for next year in the Troy Hill deal. So if you're looking, do we have a pick that we can say, oh, here's a future pick we picked up that we could throw in to maybe sweeten the pot? Yes. That's possible. We'll see. I think that the Browns right now are being patient with it. I think that there is a thought that on some level, right, that in a war, we'll call it a worst-case scenario, that you would say, okay, there isn't a market for him at all. I don't see the Browns releasing him, because all that – if you release him, all you would get offset is what he signs for, and he'd sign for the minimum.
Right.
So you're not saving anything. It's almost better to eat that extra, you know, million or so at the end of it and say, he's here, he'll leave in free agency. He at least then goes into the compensatory pick equation based on what he signs for. Could be as high as a 3, probably unlikely, because these things cancel each other out when you sign people. But they're not in a position where the Browns are forced to necessarily do anything, and we have a very patient group running things. I think that everybody would, if they were, you know, would want this to be resolved quickly. I think it's best for the Browns. I think it's best for Baker Mayfield, certainly to get somewhere and get into his new playbook so that he has a chance to go and be successful and kind of recapture the momentum he had in 2020. But yeah, it's one of those things that you'd hoped it happened over draft weekend, and it did not. And now there's no clear path necessarily for it to happen.
Well, optimistically speaking, when it happens, okay, optimistically saying it happens, and like you said, for everybody involved, it will be interesting to see if the team that he ends up going to will say, hey, let's do a deal,
right,
to get away from, like you said, the one-year rental, and he becomes a free agent, and how open-minded he would be to making a deal. Or does he say, hey, listen, you owe me the 18. I'm going to get 18.8, whatever, this year. Then I'm going to go into free agency, and I'm going to bet on myself, which he has a lot in his career. Right?
Yep. And right, because how would he – so there are two scenarios. Somebody who trades for him where he is going to be a starter or compete for a starting job, and those feel like there aren't as many realistic options as there were before. Like you could say in Carolina, could he still go in there and compete? But they would have Darnold. They would have him. They just traded up to get Matt Corral. So that feels unlikely. Seattle still makes the most sense, but publicly anyway, they have been saying that that is not something that they are interested
just
in
the other day
at this time. Right. Yeah. So, and Jimmy Garoppolo is still out there.
Right.
Now the reports are that Trey Lance is not where they were hoping. So I think Jimmy Garoppolo coming back and playing for the 49ers also feels likely. The other scenario would be somebody who has got a very established starting quarterback but doesn't have much in the backup says, we'll bring you in, maybe as a succession, maybe Tampa Bay says, Brady's got another year. Then you could come in and you're here in case he gets hurt. Now, they like the kid they drafted, Kyle Trask, I believe is his name. Could the Rams do that? I don't think many people could name the Rams backup quarterback behind Matt Stafford. I don't know. And the Rams don't have a lot of capital or anything to throw around. But where he ends up and the scenario in which he ends up will be interesting, and that would relate itself to the kind of contract he would sign going forward, because my guess would be that in either of those types of situations, nobody's locking him into anything more than he's currently making. I would imagine it would be less than he's currently making.
Sure.
And so is he willing to do that, or is he saying, let me, hopefully something happens, I play well, and now I can try to get more?
And that's what he's all about.
It is.
That's on himself.
It is.
Yeah.
All right.
Craig, thank you so much. By the way, Dino's Pancake House and the Shack in North Myrtle Beach, if you're going there.
Okay. Oh,
two fantastic little places. Steven on Twitter.
Your knowledge is unbelievable.
@Browns_daily using the hashtag AskCBD. Do you think it's time for the Browns to look at building a new stadium or just keep modifying/upgrading the current one? What would be necessary for the new one? Think we all know we need a dome or a retractable roof. I know this is something we talked about a lot here in the offseason.
Location is going to be very critical in the whole thing.
Yep.
If you win and win big, and I'm talking about on the field, if you win and win big, your bargaining power is unbelievable to get whatever you want. You want a new stadium? You know, I mean, Buffalo got good. I mean, for years and years years, that place was decrepit, and they needed a new stadium.
Rotten.
And, yeah, it was charming, but, I mean, they needed a new stadium. And then finally they get to this level, and they're going to get a new stadium, right? I think when you're really, really good, you get what you want. When the Patriots, well, they're a bad example because their owner built their own place. But I think that's what happens. So I think we're a long way away from that. Of getting it. I could certainly see it down the road because I think you can only modify so much when it becomes obsolete.
Right.
And I don't know that we're at the stage of being obsolete. But I do believe if you become this team that you're playing in huge games and you're winning those games and you're a championship team, I think everyone says whatever you want.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would your preference be, take roster out of it, and then I'll ask, depending on your answer, I'll ask the question following, given our roster. Take roster out of it. Would you want Cleveland to always remain open air? Would you entertain the idea of a dome? What do you think? If we're starting from scratch, I'm saying.
I think I would. I wouldn't mind a retractable roof.
Yep.
I really wouldn't. I get the whole thing about us, but you get over that when you get comfortable. I did go to a game when I first got into radio. I was working in Minnesota, and I did go to a game at the old Met when the Vikings were playing the Bears with Tommy Kramer at quarterback. It was great and everything, and Bud Grant was really something to see, you know, and the Vikings had no undersleeves underneath their game jerseys, and it was great, and it was machoism, but that stadium that we went into last year was plush,
it was
fantastic.
Amazing.
So I would give up. I would like comfort at some point. And I get the tradition and everything.
So, and then I would take the next step to that. And I think it would check really great. So I think it would be great to play outdoor football when we can. But we've played some games, especially even in 2020. We had three games in a row that were hardly games because of the weather conditions that were dreadful.
Absolutely.
And so it'd be nice to eliminate that. The other thing is now for the first time, you know, maybe ever, you know, since Bernie O'Brien, Sipe was the MVP in 80.
Right.
Since then, we have a quarterback who is, last season he played in the league, led the NFL in passing yards. The guy who completes 70% of his passes. And you can run a very pass air-oriented attack. And if you want to get, I'm guessing, the maximum out of Deshaun Watson's career, it would probably behoove you to play the majority of your game in good elements.
In good elements, sure.
So
yeah,
does that factor into your decision?
I think it does. Yeah, I do. I think it does. But I also think that I think people would really like the comfort factor. I think we have gotten into that a little bit more. I think people like that. I think they like going to a place and really saying it is a stadium, but it's also a place of entertainment. They want to be entertained. They want to be comfortably
entertained,
right?
Listen, and look, we can steal from the Vikings. I have no problem. If you want to be in the snow, we'll drop fake snow on you. They had plenty of fake snow dropping on people.
That's right. When we came on the air that afternoon, it was literally snowing indoors. They have this effect where they send down snowflakes. And it's great. It was great.
It's a lot better than actually being snowed on. I can tell you.
That place was beautiful.
I think it's the best stadium in the NFL.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And folks, don't forget, we played preseason in Atlanta in the Mercedes-Benz,
which was very
nice, but feels like just a monstrous dome. Yes. We were in L.A., which is, again, nice, but there's Minnesota. It's intimate. It's comfortable. It's beautiful. The shape is cool. Everything about that place I just thought was pretty special.
It was.
All right, guys, back to the hotline we go. Eugene calling us. Eugene, you are on with Nathan Zagura and Jim Donovan on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call. And it's too bad that we can't call in anymore for a couple of idiots, man, you know, because we literally have – some of the fans literally have, you know, questions that they can't get answered that you guys might not have gotten to. So thanks for taking the call today.
I got a
two-part question here. With Nick Harris – I know he's a little slight in height, and I like him too. And I heard you guys say that he's really working out hard. And I know there was a couple games last year he was literally getting manhandled. Or it was either last year or near before last.
It was the Jets game.
Yeah, man. And I'm like, man.
He's playing out of position.
Yep. Right. And he looked like he was a little slight just far as upper body. I just want to know if you guys have visibly seen him getting stronger. I know he's got pretty long arms, which is good in pass protection, but I know when you got long arms, it's hard to get a strong bench press or whatever. So
let me answer that one real quick, and then you'll do your second one. So, yes, sure. Nick Harris has been in here working his butt off, and I would urge you, Eugene, to watch the latest edition of Building the Browns, which you can get on the Browns app or youtube.com/Browns, and there's actually a full segment on Nick Harris and his commitment to his strength training and putting on the muscle, and with the strength trainers from the Browns talking about his work and actually showing somebody. So he's put on, they said, 17 pounds of muscle this offseason alone to get stronger to do that. So, yeah, Nick Harris is definitely taking very, very serious about the commitment to bettering his body.
What is he height-wise, about 6'1 or 6'? I know he's not that tall.
No, he is shorter on the center side of things. He's got a little low center of gravity, but he's got tremendous movement skills. I think he's about 6'2", which is still, for a center, is not the tallest center. But
Okay. And the second question is pretty much the same one everyone else has been asking about, Jadeveon Clowney. What's the likelihood? Are we looking 70-50, you know, 70% yeah, you know, 30% no, 50-50? I mean, I hope he comes back, because, man, if he comes back, that'll kind of put a nice little ball on the whole defense, man. It really would. Thanks
well,
for
last
taking
week,
the call,
last
you
week,
guys.
I
really
you got
Eugene,
thank you,
thanks.
Eugene.
Yeah, good questions. Last week was like the first week I read of other teams possibly being interested in him. Everything else has been quiet.
Yep.
And, you know, Eugene, probably the best people that could tell you what the percentage is of him coming back here are the current members of the Browns team, because I think they communicate with him a great deal. Myles Garrett, all those other guys on the defense. You guys had John Johnson on, didn't you, last week?
Yeah.
They could probably tell you best, because I think that they really want him back.
Everybody wants him back. And I think he wants to come back. I think he is a guy that is in no rush to do anything, and it is maybe waiting and seeing, is there a possibility that somebody goes down somewhere that would allow me to get a big payday? Mm-hmm. Because the first wave of free agency, second wave of free agency, they've come and gone. Mm-hmm. And teams have now drafted, and they filled in a lot of those needs. And so clearly the money that he was initially looking for that would have made him say, okay, it's worth it to play somewhere else, has not materialized. Yeah. I think he likes playing with the Browns. I think he likes playing opposite Myles Garrett quite a bit. He was very productive last year. The Browns were very productive when he was on the field. 34% pass rush win rate with Clowney on the field, which was best in the league. So I do think that he wants to come back. If you're asking me personally, I would put it as 67%, 33%. I believe it is twice as likely that he comes back to the Browns as not. But it's certainly 67% is not far from a lock. Right. I mean, so that's how I feel about it.
Well, I think the other thing, you could get worried about that he's not here, but also be a little bit encouraged that he's not somewhere else.
Right. And I know that what I'm about to say sounds like so obvious, but every day that goes on that he doesn't sign somewhere else makes it more likely that he's a Cleveland Brown.
Right.
And obviously, if he signed somewhere else, there'd be no chance he'd be a Cleveland Brown. But that's how I feel about
it. We appreciate the calls. Stay on hold. We may.
Maybe we'll bring him back, maybe. Okay.
If we can go a little shorter with the interview.
Yeah, it seems like we just got started. We only got two.
We started at 2:04. It's been 20 minutes, kids.
Yeah.
Matt Miller is going to join us here in a few minutes, so I want to make sure we get to him.
Okay. All right. Well, when we come back, Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst, joins us to talk about the Browns draft one more time here on ESPN Cleveland, 850 WKNR.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Browns fans, Sugardale sponsoring a grand opening event at the newest Meijer location. Visit the Brunswick store this Friday, May the 13th, for samples and giveaways and special appearances by Browns alumni and chops. For store locations and more details, visit sugardale.com/events. We go to the hotline now. We welcome in Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst. Matt, thanks for joining us here today.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks so much.
You got it. All right. The Browns did not have a first-round pick. They traded out of the second round, but we know this draft really includes Deshaun Watson, Amari Cooper, some of the assets were given up to acquire those guys. But as you look at this team, look at the roster, what do you think overall of the job that Andrew Berry and company did here in the 2022 NFL draft?
Yeah, I think it's very impressive, and I think apologize. Of course, my dog's going to bark as soon as I start talking. I think it's really impressive. Like
this would
said,
be this would be the time to have that happen.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Doing Browns radio. Right. He's although he's like a 20-pound French bulldog. It's not even an intimidating dog. Anyway, so the Browns roster. I think again, add in Amari Cooper, add in obviously Deshaun Watson. What's crazy, guys? Last summer, I remember writing that the Browns roster had very few actual holes. And I remember a year ago, you know, coming off a playoff berth, it looked like Baker was the long-term answer. It was really a roster that there weren't a lot of question marks. And I think that is even more true now, albeit with a true franchise quarterback, a guy who the last time we saw him was one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football. And that was with the situation in Houston where he didn't have the supporting cast that he has in Cleveland. You know, you didn't have an Amari Cooper. We didn't have the offensive line that Cleveland has. So, yep. And definitely not the run game. So I think you have to be excited about that. So when you factor that in and you go into the draft, you don't pick until the third round. But I feel like they walked away with guys who can contribute right away at positions of need. You know, Martin Emerson could potentially work into that mix opposite Denzel Ward, you know, where we haven't quite seen guys like Greedy Williams take that step that we thought they might coming out of college. I wouldn't be surprised if Martin Emerson ends up that other starting corner. I think you could say the same thing for Alex Wright opposite Myles Garrett. Is Chase Winovich going to take that role? Is there a chance for a guy like Clowney to come back on a veteran deal? I wouldn't be surprised if we see both Alex Wright and Perrin Winfrey push their way into at least a heavy use in a rotation.
Well, let me ask you this. When they did finally pick, and they got out of the second round, when they did pick, were you surprised that their first pick would have been a defensive back?
I wasn't. Maybe some folks were. I thought it would either be defensive end or defensive back. That sure. was kind of the intel that was out there. So looking at kind of the way the board had fallen, I truly believed at that time Martin Emerson, other than Nakobe Dean, he was my best player available at that time. So the way my board kind of stacked up, it was like, okay, this is a good pick for them. I think it's also a very good pick for the scheme, you know, to have somebody who's 6'2", 200 pounds, has great length. No, he didn't have on-ball production in college. He just had one pick. But you could see, you know, pass breakups, passes defense, that was all there. And so opposite Denzel Ward, who's fantastic but not the biggest guy, I think you want someone like this who's a little more physically gifted.
So you liked Emerson a lot coming out of Mississippi State. You mentioned Alex Wright as well out of Alabama, Birmingham, big defensive end. What did you like about him? And he's somebody that the Browns were thrilled to get.
Yeah, man, I think the first thing you notice is length. Like, I remember the first time seeing him in person was just like, my goodness, you know, and he looks bigger than 270, you know, so it was like, okay, is this a guy who could potentially bump inside on pass downs? Is someone who, you know, is only going to play outside? But I think he has the athleticism to flash off the edge even, you know, and that length definitely shows up on tape when you start to evaluate him. It's like, hey, he uses that length very well to keep blockers off his frame. You know, obviously he's not been super tested coming out of UAB, but where you have now, you kind of have the smaller, speedier guy in Winovich. This is a contrast to that. You got the longer, more powerful guy who does have some speed, you know, to bend and you know, cross space of offensive tackles. It's just, I think for Alex, it's just about probably getting a little bit stronger in terms of his play strength, and then also just, you know, learning how to put all those tools together to become a more complete pass rusher.
So Matt, this was a draft going in that had incredible talent at wide receiver, and it went off the board in a flurry in the first round and then some more in the second round, and the Browns end up with David Bell in the third round. What did you think of him, and what do you think he'll be as a Brown?
Yeah, I think he's a starter as a slot receiver, in my opinion. He was a tough player to evaluate because you watch the tape over the course of his career, and you could get pretty excited about it. You know, what he does as a route runner, the way he attacks the ball. But then, obviously, you know, you get a 4.65 in the 40 at a combine that was historically fast. That worries you a little bit. You know, it's like, okay, is the separation going to be there? Is he going to be able to run himself open like he did at Purdue? But I think he's, you know, a fantastic catcher, you know, of the football, just in terms of breaking routes, slant routes. He's going to be good at that, you know, of almost an old-school possession receiver. I think the biggest question will just be, can he get himself open? You know, because he has the body control. He definitely has the, you know, post-catch ability that we saw on tape. The only reason he's available, you know, where he's at is because of the 4.40 time. But I would not be surprised if he learns the playbook quickly if we see him work in there with Amari Cooper with Donovan Peoples-Jones and become, you know, one of the primary targets.
Yeah, and I think that's the hope. Clearly, Kevin Stefanski is very excited about him. That's what they did in the third round. You go into the fourth round, and two picks that I think a lot of people I know internally are excited about. It felt like got pretty good reviews. Perrion Winfrey, the defensive tackle out of Oklahoma, who's quite a character and has some serious athletic juice, and then Cade York, the kicker out of LSU. What did you think about the way that the Browns went there in the fourth round?
You know, people will make fun of drafting a kicker, but it's a surefire starter. You know, like getting a starter in the middle of the fourth round is how I look at it. And especially, I tweeted this during the draft that a team I spoke to, they had a higher grade on Cade York than they did on Evan McPherson out of Florida last year, who's now at the Bengals. So the respect for Cade York. I don't spend a lot of time scouting kickers, I'm not going to lie. I have people I talk to who know what they're looking at and say, hey, what do you think of this? And folks thought he's, you know, really, really good. So I liked that pick. Perrion Winfrey, I think the key is, like, you have to almost teach him to control his aggression a little bit, which is you'd rather have that.
Yeah.
I think you'd rather have a guy that you have to tell to slow down than have a guy that you have to tell to speed up. So I like that from him. You know, he's disruptive in the Big 12. You know, his pass rush win rate was fantastic. The athleticism's there. I think he's a player who definitely could be a better pro than he was collegiate, even, because the tools are all there. I think it's just getting someone to rein him in a little bit.
You know, isn't it amazing, Matt? We go through all of these picks, okay, and the Browns ended up with nine guys coming in. And you just touched on it, and we've talked about it before here on the show. The kicker will be the most immediate impact. I mean, it's opening day, and you're in a tight game, and you're going to be looking at Cade York going out there to try and win a game. Now, he either does it or he becomes public enemy number one pretty quickly, you know,
for sure,
in Cleveland or in any other town. But it is amazing how this kid will become an immediate, important part of the puzzle for the Browns
factor
every Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and the weird thing, or not weird thing, the good thing about Cade York is he's also punted. He's been the kickoff guy at LSU, and I believe he holds the record for 50-yard field goals at LSU.
Yep, 15.
Like 15, yeah, that's right, 15, that's a lot. That's so also, like, obviously going from Baton Rouge to Cleveland, a little bit different environment, different elements that you're going to have to deal with. But I would be encouraged by someone who has the strength, the accuracy, and, you know, the versatility even of, like, hey, if we need this guy to punt in a pinch, he can do it and do it at a high level.
Matt, I was reading the one that you did with Jordan Reed where you kind of went through your favorite picks of all the different rounds, and I know that Isaiah Thomas, who the Browns got in the seventh, Perrion Winfrey's teammate out of Oklahoma on that line, was one that you liked. What are we getting in him other than obviously a tremendous name named after the great Detroit Piston? what are we getting in him as a player? And he's somebody that you think, because it's different here now. These fifth, sixth, seventh rounders are not locks to make a football team with the Cleveland Browns anymore like they used to be, but Thomas seems to be a guy who stands out to you. What does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I think athleticism at the pass rusher spot. You know, kind of like we talked about with Alex Wright, as a player who maybe would have been called a tweener in the past. I think Isaiah Thomas is more of your pure speed rusher. You know, he's got all the bursts that you need to beat people off the snap. He uses his hands well. And also, I'm a Texas fan, so I had to watch this guy just kill us. He's so good at getting his hands up and either taking away passing windows or batting the ball down. Like, he shows that kind of, you know, football IQ of, okay, I can't get to the quarterback, but I'm going to make his life hell at the line of scrimmage anyway. You know, so that's one of my favorite things. I could not believe he was available in the seventh round. I thought for sure he would be, you know, a fifth round pick at worst. So it's fantastic value. You know, I think he's going to have to get a little bit better against the run, but, like, okay, I'll take that in the seventh round. Let's just let him put his ears back and be, you know, a depth piece at defensive end.
Matt, what about the running back the Browns got out of Cincinnati? The kid Ford comes in here. He had played at Alabama. He went to Alabama. Then he ended up at Cincinnati. Boy, Cincinnati had a lot of kids drafted.
They were
legit in this draft. There's no doubt about it. This guy comes to a team that's got Nick Chubb. They've got Kareem Hunt. They've got D'Ernest Johnson. What can we look for from him?
Yeah, I was surprised that they used a draft pick on a running back, actually. That was really the only move they made where I was like, okay, well, is there more to the story here that
we
don't know?
What's
but I think with Jerome Ford, he's a great receiver out of the backfield. So he does bring a skill set that's a little different. I think, you know, Nick and Kareem, if you just ask them to line up and run, you're not going to be like, oh, my gosh, they're super fast. Now they do run away from people, but I, you know, their time speed, especially Kareem Hunt, time speed maybe not as impressive. So I think with Jerome Ford, you're getting more of like a slasher who can also be a really good receiver out of the backfield. So that's what I'm seeing. And also, you know, a guy who's going to be faster than the 4.5s that were, you know, ran by Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. So I think it is more of that, more of a diversity in the backfield. He is different. You know, if they had drafted someone that was more similar to Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, I think you'd probably scratch your head even more. But, man, he's good as a receiver. I know there were teams that even thought if he worked at it, he could probably be a slot receiver if he wanted to be. So I would say he's your, you know, third down option that can spell the other running backs and be that receiver out of the backfield.
Matt, we appreciate time talk with Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst. We'll leave you with this one. What was your favorite pick that was made by Andrew Berry in this draft?
Honestly, I think it was probably Perrion Winfrey, just because he has the potential to be a very impactful three technique. And especially, like, we're talking about, like you guys mentioned, a team that didn't pick until the, you know, early hundreds. The
early round.
60s, late 60s, yep. Yeah. So to get, I think, players that, no rookie starters other than Cade York, but guys who have developmental traits, and Perrion Winfrey does. He does have that three technique quickness. As I said, it's just about getting him dialed down a little bit, which I'll take any day of the week.
Matt, we appreciate the time very much. Thanks for the great coverage and for sharing some knowledge with us here today on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right, Matt Miller there from ESPN. Still so much more to come. But before we do that, I want to remind you that if you're gambling without setting limits on how much you're going to wager or how long you'll play, it's like a football team going into the game without a game plan. Probably going to end up in a loss. So always set limits before you bet. Get more tips like this at KeepItFunOhio.com. So much more to come. Maybe even a call. I don't know. We'll see. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, wrapping it up here on this Monday, Nathan Skura and the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan. Before we get there real quickly, great tweet comes out from the Jokic brothers. And you remember the confrontation between the Morris twins and the Jokic brothers, and there was potentially some beef there. Apparently, it's been leaked that Nikola Jokic is going to win the MVP again.
Yes,
and so,
that's right.
So his brother tweets out, "Thank you to the NBA for MVP for my brother Nikola." At Keith Morris, tagging one of the Morris twins, "Cry you never get MVP!" Exclamation points. Love it.
The back and forth is
tremendous. All right. Yeah, stiff.
All right, we got a couple quick minutes. Bobby in Canton, quick, and you're on with Nathan.
What's
and
up, Bobby?
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Good. Bobby. How are you?
Is this the Bobby?
This is the Bobby.
Oh?
Oh.
Oh, baby.
All right.
All right.
Baby.
Let's go.
Let's go. So, I've been betwixt which questions to ask the past 50 minutes.
Fantastic. Hired.
Bobby, you get one question.
He's hired.
We
he already dropped a betwixt. Fine. He already dropped a betwixt on you, Gibbe.
I don't acknowledge.
Go ahead, Bobby.
So what is the best story that you have from a wedding?
Ooh, what is the best story that we've had from a wedding?
Jim, sometimes these Q&As go a little sideways.
Yeah, they came in, asked me, and Bobby Meckling is a tremendous question type of a guy. I have one for me, which is probably, I think, the funniest. But I was at a wedding, no names, please, where the groom felt compelled after everybody did their speeches to take the microphone, and while acknowledging that he had now entered into a lifelong union,
yes,
he took the microphone and needed everybody in attendance to know that before he decided to get married, he used to be a player and was able to have a lot of girlfriends prior to this. So just in case you're wondering if he's settling down because he had no other options, he used to do all right.
I have to go back to my wedding, which was at St.
Gonna win you points.
St.
Good for
Christopher's
you.
In Rocky River, and I remember being very nervous, pregame of the before the ceremony, and I saw a friend of mine from Boston who had traveled to be at the wedding, which I was very appreciative of and very excited to see him, and I was so flustered to see him. Hey, how you doing? And like that, I turned around and I took down the statue of Jesus Christ, our Lord.
This is a bad omen, Jimmy. This is a bad omen.
Oh, and my mother was in the front row, a devout Catholic. And you go, oh, my God, mother of God, Jimmy.
Well,
there you go.
Bobby, I didn't know if you thought knew what you were going to get into there.
Like, was it a quick recovery? Was there damage done?
Literally, Christ is falling as he's going down, okay? And I pull out almost like an Omar Vizquel trap at shortstop on a bad hop, and I pull Christ just feet from the floor because he would have been all over the floor.
Yeah. Okay?
And because the floor was like marble, hard marble.
Yeah.
And boom, I save Jesus Christ and bring him back.
That's even more remarkable.
And the wedding.
Yeah, I was going to say, could have got a lot. Oh, man. Yeah. Is there video of this?
No, this was pre-video.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a real treat. That would have been a real treat. What a save.
The pictures are in black and white.
Yeah. They've got us. I mean, I feel like that is an absolute sign. Yeah, yeah, bless this wedding. Yeah. Absolutely. This union. Bobby.
So I'm glad Bobby brought up the question. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. Yeah. It's funny. You have a lot of stories like that. And I tried to keep mine as air appropriate as I could. But there, you run into some odd things at weddings, it turns out, in your days.
We are officially into the wedding season.
Yeah.
This is the wedding season.
That's right.
A June bride.
That's right.
A June bride.
Oh,
we went. My bride was a June bride, June 16th.
June 11th.
I say Gibby was in June. Absolutely.
Gibby had one of the great weddings.
Outdoor extravaganza.
Unbelievable. It was fantastic. I tell you, I can remember it very well, Jason. It was the night, I believe, the Monsters won the Calder Cup.
They did. I had a couple hockey hooligans in the bar area start spraying people when the Monsters won.
Didn't they win? They won in overtime.
I'm so mad I was out of town. That really bums me out. I heard it was just a tremendous soiree.
It was a tremendous venue.
Yeah.
It was great time. I mean, and he and his wife did a great job.
This guy's pure joy. Look at him.
It was great.
Who loves a party more than Gibby? Nobody.
About 97 degrees.
Yeah. So
Minor details.
By the time we were out there, it had cooled off. It was beautiful.
The cocktails were flowing.
They
didn't matter.
I bet they were.
They were flowing.
Any peanut butter and jelly at the wedding?
There was everything but peanut butter and jelly. Yeah, well,
we know the guy. We know a guy here. Jim, speaking of a treat, always a pleasure to have you on.
I had a great time.
Yes, it was a blast.
Great time. Imagine how it's going to be every Sunday.
That's right.
We'll squeeze in some of the game.
What we can control will be a great time. That's right. Well, come on, guys. Help us out there. All right. For the great Jim Donovan and Jason Gibbs, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. The next level is next year on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.